everybody. Dave Consolazio alongside Sam Saig for episode 10 of Running the Option. Sam, I usually ask you how you're doing at the beginning of every episode, but kind of an arbitrary question this week.
Yeah, I mean, what a time it is to be a college football fan. What we know is that we're coming off of the game of the century, as it's been proclaimed. We have a great candidate for game of the season this week. But sandwiched between them is the worst scandal in the history of college football and one of the worst in sports history. So there's a lot to digest since last time we ran the option.
The only way we can go about this, we obviously have to preface this by saying that this is so much bigger than college football, and we're going to spend a segment on it. We're going to talk about all the things that have come down on Penn State and Joe Paterno, and talk about our feelings about it, go into some of the details, and then we're going to put this segment behind us and move into college football. And it's not out of lack of sensitivity. The victims here and everything that's happened are so much more important than the game of college football. But this is a college football podcast, and that's what we have to do. Obviously, we just have to move on and talk about other things. But obviously, before we do that, this is the biggest story of the week for a reason. It is nothing short of a tragedy. And before I get into the details, I just want to ask you, Sam, overall, you know, you've been a college football fan longer than I have, and Joe Pa, obviously one of the faces of college football, just your initial feelings.
Yeah, well, I mean, tragedy is the first word that came to my mind. His firing was inevitable, unfortunately. And when you look at this story, it's as sad as I've seen in sports in a while. It's a despicable story in any part of society, but it's especially disgraceful that it took place in sports involving a coach, an assistant coach in this case. It's complicated further by the fact that it happened in college football, a sport reeling from many years of various scandals, albeit nothing quite like this one. But the most disturbing part of all for me is that it took place at Penn State. Because for so many years, going back to the SMU death penalty long before that and since that, Penn State was the program that college football fans could turn to for doing things the right way, by and large. You know, you might have some disciplinary things here and there, but this program has been squeaky clean for the greater part of the last half century. And Joe Paterno is now in his 62nd, or was in his 62nd season as part of the Penn State coaching staff, his 46th as head coach. And in that time, he averaged 10 wins doing it the right way every step of the way. This is the one school and coach that it took me a lot of time to believe these allegations. And it's still setting in to a certain extent. I think that's part of why you see the students outside of his house and rioting, as sad as it is. Because the support for him and his legacy was determined by so many people already. He took the great experiment of trying to successfully marry championship football with academics, and he made it a reality. He's a graduate of Brown University, comes from the Ivy League. Enrollment at Penn State has grown exponentially because of Joe Paterno and his influence. And all of that now comes to a sudden and devastating end. And you know what? It's the right move.
Yeah, that was my initial response when I first heard these allegations and I first started to hear the story unfold. I was thinking, it's a shame that this is how Joe Paterno is going to be remembered. I mean, how do you destroy nearly half a century, more than half a century if you include before he was head coach, of all the great things he did in one day, in one week? Yeah. But as the week went on, and as I familiarized myself with this story, it's not only fitting and correct that this is what he'll be remembered by. It's just the way it has to be, because I just want to go down the list. CBS Sports did a great job of putting everything together chronologically, because this is a somewhat confusing story, an overwhelming story. Yep. No matter where you turn, both on sports networks and major networks, everybody's covering this story. So I just want to go chronologically over some of the key things that have happened. In 1969, it goes all the way back to then, that Jerry Sandusky started his career at Penn State as defensive line coach. In 1977, he found Second Mile, which was a group foster home, and eventually became a charity for troubled boys. Fast forward to 1998, Victim 6, as he's known, 11 years old, showered with Sandusky. His mother reported this to university police after he'd come home with wet hair. Sandusky apologizes to the family, and after talking to the police, he admits that he did shower with the boy naked and had engaged in hugging with him, but he apologized and no charges were pressed. That's in 98. In 99, he retires from Penn State, but he still has status there. He can still come and go as he pleases, as is usually the case with coaches that retire. In 2000, a janitor observes him performing oral sex on a boy aged around 11 to 13. He tells his supervisor, the janitor does. The supervisor says that the janitor should report that to the police. The janitor doesn't. Neither does the supervisor, and this goes on. Then in 2002, a graduate assistant, who we now know as Mike McQueary, sees victim 2, as he's known, 10 years old, subjugated to anal intercourse. He tells his father, he tells Joe Paterno. Joe Paterno tells Tim Curley, his boss, and Tim Curley and Gary Schultz, they have a meeting with Mike McQueary, they talk about it. And what comes out of that meeting, they say to McQueary that we've taken away Sandusky's locker room keys, and we've reported our findings to the Second Mile Group. And that was it. That's as far as it went in 2002. In 2009, victim one comes forward, and more power to him for having the courage to do this. He goes forward and goes to the authorities and said that over the course of a four-year period, multiple times, he was touched inappropriately by Sandusky. The investigation begins. 2010, Sandusky retires from day-to-day work at the Second Mile. And then on November 5th, he's arrested, and all of this starts to come out. The most revolting thing about this story for me is we're looking at 1977, when he founded Second Mile, to 2010, when he stopped day-to-day work there. That's an over 30-year period. And these allegations aren't even scratching the surface, in all likelihood, of how many victims there are here. Because the nature of these crimes, by their nature, so many of them go unreported. Because as victims, a lot of these kids aren't going to tell, aren't going to come out about it, especially as adults after the fact. As revolting as all the things we know are, there are so many more. And it's just, you know, like you said, in no matter what it's in, it's sports or anything, it's revolting, and it's the lowest point of humanity. I mean, this guy's clearly a monster.
And he leveraged his position of power to make himself that much more of a predator, because when you are able to use not only his foundation, but your position at Penn State, a huge university.
And an organization that, like you pointed out, is known
right.
for its prestige and honor.
Everything that he had working for him, and I'm sure he understood this, allowed him to continue to kind of propagate this behavior.
And a lot of these things were happening in the locker room of the football stadium. It's not like they were happening off campus. These things were happening on campus. And that's kind of what I've come to and why I've become so angry with Joe Paterno. A lot of people are saying, correctly so, that this isn't about what Joe Paterno did, it's about what he didn't do.
Right.
You know, it's about that, yes, he went to his boss, and perhaps that is all he was legally obligated to do, but why didn't he do more? Why didn't he continue to follow up? Why didn't anybody? This isn't just a Joe Paterno thing. I mean, you go down the list, there have been at least 10 people that could have done something or said something, probably a lot more. And regardless of their logic, there's no excuse for this to have gone on as long as it did. And I mean, how many victims were there because nobody stepped up and did anything?
I mean, all week, you know, we've heard about this argument of legal responsibility versus moral responsibility. And technically, legally, they may have met their basic duty here. But morally, it's hard to say anything other than each one of them failed across all counts.
And certainly the AD and the guys in charge didn't meet their legal obligation either. Yeah. And I think they'll probably be brought to justice for that. But certainly Joe Paterno did, and certainly Mike McQuarrie did in going to their superiors. But what really gets to me about this, as I was saying, is that you look at, and these don't even compare, and that's the crazy thing about the story. All scandals we've seen before this don't compare. I mean, talking about kids that are getting benefits just doesn't matter compared to any of this. But you look at Jim Tressel, you look at Pete Carroll, you look at guys that have come under scrutiny before, and what the consensus always is these guys were supposed to know that under your tutelage and your football program and your locker room, you're supposed to know. Pete Carroll was supposed to know that Reggie Bush was accepting gifts off of campus. Jim Tressel was supposed to know that his players were signing memorabilia and getting tattoos off of campus. So how was Joe Paterno not supposed to know that this was going on under his nose for arguably decades? I'm not saying he knew and was covering it up. I'm not saying that at all. But if we're going to say that it's a coach's responsibility to know what's going on in his locker room, how do you get a pass for something this huge?
Yep.
You don't.
And while the Pete Carroll investigation and the Jim Tressel, while Ohio State and USC were trying to sort through how to deal with this, Penn State again was used as this beacon of hope. Why can't you look at Joe Paterno and the way he's done it for so long? Who would have known that in the middle of those investigations, we had all of these victims that were, some of them had come out, but most of them were silent. Certainly the reports hadn't gone public the way that we know now. Just incredible that, like you said, if the head coach of a football program is supposed to be where the buck stops, then this, above all scandals that I can think of in the history of college football and also sports even, this has to rank at the top. And it's stunning to think about, because this man for so many years really has done things the right way. And it's been very difficult to keep the program at the level he's kept it at amidst all of the pressure that goes along with kids. And by kids, I mean college football kids.
Right, not victim kids. Yeah.
And I mean, we know how hard it is to manage student athletes, and he's done it beautifully. But this is unforgivable for the Penn State football program, for Joe Paterno, and for the university. And as we've seen, it's affected the university. Forget the athletic department. The entire university now has changed because of this.
Joe Paterno and Mike McQuarrie obviously need to be held accountable for this, but the guys at the top, Tim Curley, the athletic director, it's easy for us sitting here in our chairs to say, oh, we would have done this, we would have done that, and everybody gets in the habit of doing that. Everybody is holier than thou after the fact when they put themselves in somebody's shoes. But honestly, I don't like to do that generally because, you know, I don't know the circumstances or whatever, but honestly, what on earth was the incentive for not turning this over to the police? Was it just to save face for the university? Was it really worth more children going through this for however long it took before it was discovered? Was it just to save face? That's the only thing I can come up with as a logical reason they wouldn't go to the police, and it's a heinous one.
Yeah, I mean, we'll never know what went through the minds of these very powerful people. It has to start with the president, Graham Spanier, and you know, I'm glad in the press conference that we heard earlier that when they went over the changes that Penn State was going to make, the Board of Trustees, and when they had their decision finally made, they started by dismissing him first, and it was the right move, because in reality, it's Graham Spanier that's at the top.
He's the one that's above the AD.
He's absolutely above the AD. He's the one that's in charge. He's the one that should be responsible for this. And then you can go from there, and that's exactly what they did. And there's a reason he was dismissed first, because he is the guy that should have been dismissed first, and then everybody from there, and that's exactly how they've done it. They've leveled the entire power balance in that university. Fear seems to be the thing that comes to my mind. They were so afraid to do anything that they felt like their best move was to stay silent and hope somehow that they could survive this. And it was out of complete fear to me. And they had no idea how to handle it. Like we said earlier in the week, every time they should have made a left turn, they made a right throughout this process. It's an example that will be studied for years as to how not to run an organization and how not to be truthful and be honest and be, you know, forthcoming about mistakes that are of the highest degree in terms of all of this.
Yeah, when you look at past cover-ups, I mean, we're talking about cover-ups of kids going out on a yacht and, you know, having fun with agents.
Yeah.
We're not talking about one of the worst crimes to humanity being covered up. There's just no excuse for this. I mean, most, if not all, scandals we've seen before revolve around somewhat archaic NCAA rules.
And usually financial in their motive.
Yes.
I mean, you know, look at the scandals we've had, at least in the last decade. Almost all of them involve money changing hands to students and agents and things like that. This is on an entirely other level.
Yeah, there's just nothing that can be said in these guys' defense for not doing more. And from a football perspective, can understand why people feel bad for Joe Paterno, but I don't have any remorse. I was disgusted that he was going to be coaching at Nebraska. I said that Penn State firing Paterno was probably the first right turn they've made along the way. And they obviously have
all of the power guys.
Everybody.
The top.
Yeah,
that was a good move. And they do need to be. The Board of Trustees did get this right, so I applaud them for that.
Yeah, I mean, it was the only move. Right. But there were some people that were saying they wouldn't have the bravery to do it, and they did, so yay for that. But a very small condolence to all this stuff that has happened. But I don't have any remorse for Joe Paterno. I mean, do you?
My feeling on Joe Paterno is that this will be at the top of the list when you talk about his legacy. But I will not, at least as hard as it is to do right now, I will not forget how many lives he affected in a positive way, because you're talking about 62 years of a lot of very good things. This just happens to be one of the worst things that will come up with his name, and it will define him in many ways. I don't know what his legacy will read in 10 years, because clearly right now this is all we can think about. There's too much about Joe Paterno in terms of doing things right for me to completely ignore that. But this will undoubtedly be at or near the top of the list when you think of his name. And it's incredible to think that that's the case.
No, you're right. Character is defined by more than one act.
Right.
And his character has been proven over the course of his 84-year life.
Right. But this is...
But exactly.
You can't turn your back on this.
I mean, one action can define you. Yeah. And this is it. This is it. I hate to say it. And I mean, there's a lot of frustration at Penn State right now. And I feel really bad for the players who obviously had nothing to do with this. I feel really bad for the students and for the alumni that you have their names tarnished by this when they obviously had nothing to do with it. I can understand the frustration, and I understand the support for Joe Paterno for the reasons you mentioned, that he's been everything positive about the program for decades. But it's just ill-timed. It's not in the right place right now. These rallies to support him and all the people that were buying tickets to see his last home game, maybe I'm just being callous here, but it's not the right time.
Yeah.
It's not the right time to support this guy. There will be a time, perhaps, when this has all gone on the table and perhaps all the facts have come out and we can really get to the bottom of it. You know, some reports say that he wasn't told about the anal intercourse, that McQuarrie just said to him that there was just some fondling going on. So maybe the way that it was presented to him, he didn't take it as seriously as he would have if he knew the whole story. Maybe this is more Mike McQuarrie's fault than Joe Paterno's fault. I don't know. The point is, there's no degree of child molestation that makes it okay to turn a blind eye to. And the problem with a lot of these people going out in support of Joe Paterno is that even if they're supporting everything he's done up to this point, the perception is that they're supporting this, and they're supporting child molestation. I know that's a bold thing to say, but that's the perception right now. If you hop on Twitter or look at what the media is saying, it's making Penn State out to look like a bunch of idiots, and that may not be fair, but you have to think about your actions. You have to think about what a rally right now in support of this is saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's ill-timed. You know, you can understand where students are coming from when you're young and you're trying to support your coach that's defined your program. I mean, we are dealing with a man that really, you say that no one's bigger than a university or a program, but in many ways, Joe Paterno is Penn State. He's all that you think of when you think of Penn State. That's what happens when you've been there for as long as he has. And so you can understand why with that kind of longevity, you're going to get support from students, but it's just ill-timed. It's not at all the right approach to take, especially when you've taken it to the degree that they have where there's rioting going on. There's just no reason for it right now. Briefly, and as hard as it is, I guess from a college football podcast perspective, we can touch on it. As you look at this Penn State program, and it's a distant thought right now, but we'll touch on it briefly, there's going to be a new president at this university, a new athletic director, and a new football coach for a place, again, that knows nothing but longevity and success. It's going to be culture shock in Happy Valley. And it's going to take a very long time for this prominent and valuable, and by valuable, I'm talking about the third most valued program from a dollars perspective in the country, behind only Texas and Notre Dame. And then you're talking about Penn State as in value. This program will take a long time to rebuild itself. It will not happen in the short term, and I think that's part of why you do see the emotion coming from the students, because the smart ones probably understand that Penn State, as they know it, will never be the same. And so you're going to have emotion because of that. And that's where we're at now with Penn State going forward.
Yeah, the entire identity of Penn State and what it means to be a Nittany Lion is destroyed by this. Yeah, and if you want to talk about it from a college football perspective, recruiting, the football team is done.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing, everybody in this recruiting class,
I wonder who's making the calls.
Yeah, nobody's making the calls right now. And if you are making the calls, what are you saying?
Yeah.
Now, sorry about all that, but the recruiting is done.
Yeah.
Nobody in their right mind is going to want to play here. This isn't something that's going to blow over. I mean, it's something, like you said, over time, Penn State can rebuild. They may rebuild. They may never rebuild. We'll find out. But it's not Reggie Bush. It's not kids taking some benefits.
It's not the SMU death penalty.
It's not the SMU death penalty, which took them decades to get over from a football perspective. It's so much worse than all of that. And from a football perspective, the school is tarnished perhaps forever.
I mean, you've heard.
And for outside of a football perspective, this is a Penn State college perspective that's been tarnished forever by this.
You've heard the name in some reports, a guy like Urban Meyer, that has been rumored already to be involved in the job. But you really have to ask yourself, and Urban Meyer, you know, this is a question only he can answer deep down, is, are you ready, Urban, to take on this kind of responsibility? As good of a recruiter and coach as you are you really ready to step into this program at this time and try to rebuild it? Because whoever does, it's going to take a lot of character and a lot of patience, and I'm not sure who that person is right now. It's just unprecedented territory for any college football program, and maybe even for any university, to try to rebuild after this.
Someone might argue that, you know, this was just one man committing these crimes. I mean, and at the end of the day, it was. But every single person along the way that had any idea that this was going on, that looked the other way, isn't as guilty, obviously, but is certainly extremely guilty and extremely accountable for what happened. Because if any one victim could have been saved by somebody stepping up, that would have been one less victim that this monster ruined the life of. And it wasn't one. It was who knows how many. I shudder to think of how many. And that's why whatever happens to Joe Paterno and all of these guys, I don't have any remorse for. I simply don't.
Now we turn our attention towards what some people are saying should be a game that's canceled on Saturday. Tom Bradley takes over as interim coach. The game, you know, as of now is scheduled, and it's hard to imagine what the NCAA would have to do logistically to cancel that kind of a football game. But that gives you some idea of the perspective of where we're at now. And if the game does go on, I can't imagine what kind of atmosphere and how charged it will be with all the media there and the feelings and the emotion. So you can understand the sentiment for somebody that might want to cancel that game. But we'll see as we get into the week what happens.
I wonder if it will be canceled with these riots going on campus right now, because that's going to be a very hostile environment. They're going to need to have a lot of security there, because I heard this morning when Joe Paterno announced his retirement at the end of the year, this is his last home game, and it was a chance for fans to say goodbye, a lot of these fans that were supporting him, and ticket sales went way up, and there was a lot of interest in the game, because, again, nobody, I'm certainly not saying any of these people are condoning what happened, but they want to thank Joe Paterno for all that he did over the years. And now all these people have tickets to this game that Joe Paterno won't be coaching. And if Nebraska wins this game, or wins it big, there's going to be a lot of emotion, and it's a dangerous situation, and it's why, really, the NCAA does need to consider postponing the game, if not canceling it, because it's a very dangerous environment. And, heck, every week in college football you see hostile environments, but this is a little different, I think.
Yeah, I mean, on a very big side note, this was going to be potentially a record-setting day for Joe Paterno. He's coached 548 games, tied for the most ever. This would have set the record at 549, but for many reasons and in a fitting way, that won't happen, and it shouldn't happen. And that's where we go now with Penn State as Tom Bradley takes over and a new era gets underway there.
And I think the worst is yet to come. That's the sad part. As more comes out, this story is only going to get uglier.